watching the ships roll in, and I watch them roll away again. Oh yeah, sit on the dock of the bay, watching the clouds roll away.
Welcome to the Combat Radio Network. This is Three Men and a Microphone, recorded inside the Iron Mike Studio, located in the Military Exchange on Route 332 in Canandaigua. Three Men and a Microphone is an opinion show based on the ins and outs, the news, politics, and scuttlebutt about town and the city of Canandaigua. Beautiful, historical Canandaigua, New York, where the hops grow higher, the grapes grow sweeter, and the sun always shines. In conjunction with 1310 AM, Canandaigua, Three Men and a Microphone, all the way from Rochester to Geneva, New York. I am your host, Corporal Tim Thornton, and this is Three Men and a Microphone. And we'll be right back after these messages. Clerico, can I get a drink? Sumatra, pull down the shades. Duro, lock the door. We're gonna party. Hear me? How long I've been up? Welcome, enlisted and officers, WMs and Devil Dogs. I'm Corporal Tim Thornton, your host for tonight. This is the DD214 and Laurel Cigar Lounge, fresh from the Dominican Republic, Hickory Mono Cigars, here at the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Smoking lamp is out. Welcome to Three Men and a Microphone. This is Corporal Tim Thornton, and I'm here today. And this is Civil War Radio with Armin Marinetti, Mike Yarger, Melissa Walker, our tambourine girl, Tracy Partridge, and Donna Bob from Scope.
It's a long story.
And Armin, so the Ninth Amendment? Or no, the 10th Amendment is going to be in the news.
It is in the news. We're going to we're so timely. You know, we're ahead of the curve here.
Right, that's right.
So we're going to do Civil War Radio, and as you guys remember, it's been a while, so maybe we should repeat our goal here.
Okay, so we're going to be civil. In other words, we're going to be kind to one another, and
well, at least open to an exchange of views.
Mature,
notice
adult-like.
My hands are towards Michael.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, civil, well-behaved, yes, yes. And then
that's
war part.
A lot.
Yes, it's a chore. And the war part, what about the war? What's that all about?
Well, the war is we are going to disagree. People are going to have different views and different values that they want to express. And, you know, that should be okay.
Yep.
That's the point of America.
Yes, that's called civilization. We're supposed to be civilized. So today we're going to wrap up the 9th and 10th Amendment, which is the end of the Bill of Rights. So let's get right to it, because the 10th Amendment is in the news, and we'll talk about that at the end of this segment. 9th Amendment, it's a short amendment. I'm going to read it. It says, the 9th Amendment, the enumeration in the Constitution. Enumeration means actually worded or listed or appearing in the Constitution. So the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights, comma, shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. So that's a real sophisticated way of saying this isn't the final word. We may have other rights that aren't mentioned here in the Bill of Rights. And I'm going to give credit to a well-respected radio personality by the name of Mark Levin, who's also an attorney, and he reminds everybody it's not the Bill of Needs, it's the Bill of Rights. And that comes from when somebody says you don't need an AR-15 to go hunting. Doesn't take 10 shots to kill a deer, or whatever that was, you know,
right.
What I'm referring to.
Yep.
It's not a Bill of Needs, it's a Bill of Rights. Okay.
Your rights that are, I got to say it like this, your God-given rights.
Yeah.
Or in this case, our founding forefathers.
Yep. But, and they use God or nature's God as their source for our rights.
Correct.
So let's see. Well, what does this mean? Let's try to break this down a little bit more. The Ninth Amendment is kind of a safety net. So it tells us that the other eight amendments prior to this aren't the only rights that we have. There are other fundamental rights, and we'll talk about a law case that hits on them in just a second. There's also unenumerated rights. That means that they're not listed or worded in the document, the U.S. Constitution. So why don't we go right to the most famous case that I could find that discuss our other rights that are not listed. And that case is called Griswold versus Connecticut. Took place in 1965. The Warren Court, we talked about the Warren Court before, Chief Justice Earl Warren, this was way back in the 60s when there was a lot of upheaval going on in America. There were a couple of assassinations, John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr., and also Bobby Kennedy, going from 63 to 68. So it was a tough time in history. So there were some major decisions, and this Griswold versus Connecticut was a 7-2 decision in favor of Griswold. So here's the story. Griswold was a director of Planned Parenthood in Connecticut. And there was a Connecticut law saying that you could not give out birth control methods or medicine to even married couples. Okay, so this director, Griswold, and I'm sorry, I didn't get the first name, but I believe the director was a woman, was giving out birth control medication to married couples in violation of Connecticut law. And it worked its way all the way up to the Supreme Court. And what the Supreme Court decided, I'm going to use one of their words because I didn't know the meaning of this word, so I jotted it down, and I'm probably going to mispronounce it. It's called a penumbra, P-E-N-U-M-B-R-A. Does anybody know the meaning of that word?
Penumbra. Is it like a, like almost like a, not chaos, but just a whole mess, like a whole bunch of different topics and issues that are just need to be directed? And
I know the definition.
What do you think?
Well, if it's chaos and things go in a different direction, and the end of it is BRA, bra for women.
Oh, jeez.
It absolutely makes sense.
Hang on to your hats. Here we go.
It has some kind of feminine identification in it.
No. I looked up the meaning of the word penumbra, and when there is a shadow casted, okay, there's a darker part, and then there's a grayer part. The penumbra is the grayer part of a shadow. It's not the bold darkness from a shadow. It's the little filmy part that is farther away from the object that's casting the shadow.
So it's like the aura.
Good, yes. That's a good way to think of it. So there, go ahead.
When there's an eclipse of the sun, the penumbra, they tell you never look past the penumbra.
Okay.
That's what that
good way to remember. Yeah, good. All right. So with the Chief Justice and the other six justices were saying that the words of the Constitution cast a shadow, but there's also that aura around it that has to be included as our protections, as our rights. And they gave some examples. A zone of privacy is what they used. For example, not only our speech, but our thoughts. We have some privacy and protection in our thoughts within our homes. our belongings, our effects, what's on our person, what's in our pockets, what's in our vehicles. We have this zone of privacy.
It's amazing that they had that kind of forethought without today's modern technology encroaching on all of our privacy, like Alexa and, you know, cameras and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, like there was a British guy holding his ear up to the wall of your house.
Mm-hmm.
And was allowed to do so.
Hmm.
Well, they were allowed to house him, right? So they could hear everything
right.
that they said.
And when you're not there and they are, what if they're going through your belongings? What are they going through your sock drawer?
Right.
Right? And finding the stash of $20 bills that you have for an emergency, just in case.
Or
banks
my,
are closed.
Or my lucky socks.
Your lucky socks, which everybody has been looking for. So, a couple other zones of privacy that came out of this decision. We have a right against our self-incrimination, our own bodies. We have privacy of our own bodies, of our marriage. We have privacy about our marriage and our bedrooms. So you've probably heard the phrase, we don't want the government in our bedrooms. This is kind of where...
And it says these words that you're reading?
In the explanation that I read that was mentioned by Chief Justice Earl Warren, yes, he used these words. Now, I synthesized them for radio, you know, instead of reading everything. And plus, I don't want to write it all down. I don't want to print it all out. And I don't want to carry the computer. So I'm being a little bit more... I'm citing
sure,
the important stuff. But yes, you can see
I'm
these
sure
words.
He wrote a thesis on it. You're not going to read the whole thesis.
Right. And this doesn't sound like something I would say.
You're pretty smart.
Well, not that smart. Okay. So that's the Ninth Amendment. Moving on to the Tenth Amendment. I had this story. I'll hold off. I'll tell the two court cases at the end this time. We'll talk about the Tenth Amendment, and then we'll talk about two different court cases. this is a short read, the Tenth Amendment, so I encourage people to go and read this. But here's what it says. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it, the Constitution, to the states, are reserved to the states, respectively, or to the people. Okay, so again, that's a kind of a catch-all. You know, it opens the door that if there, this isn't the final word. The states and us, the people, we have a say. We're supposed to be in partnership with the federal government. They're not supposed to rule over us. We're supposed to be self-governed. And also, if we do not agree with how our government is going, we should have the authority to replace. And we try to do that peacefully through elections. Okay? Hopefully, that'll remain. But it appears from our discussions here on Civil War Radio, sometimes elections have little to no results. So, 10th Amendment. Some of the highlights. The balance of power should be between the states and the new federal government and us, the people. Maybe I'll go right into the... Let me do the court case, and then we'll go into what's going on in the news today that relates to this. Back in 2011, there was a case, Bond versus the United States. No, it wasn't James Bond. It was Carol Ann Bond, B-O-N-D. And she won her case against the United States with a 9-0 Supreme Court decision.
Unanimous
decision. So let's see if I can synthesize this case. And it was not that long ago, 2011. Carol Ann Bond tried to poison her husband's mistress. Melinda Haynes. A Pennsylvania grand jury charged Bond with violating a U.S. federal treaty from 1993. It was a chemical weapons convention treaty. And they're saying that the chemical weapons not only applies to the federal government, but also to the states as well. So she challenged their decision in Pennsylvania. They said that she was actually using chemical weapons illegally. U.S. Court of Appeals determined that Bond couldn't challenge the decision because she lacked standing, which that means she didn't have a case, which seems hard to believe because she was charged of a crime. So you would think just by the fact that she's charged with a crime, she should have standing. But the smarter people know better. So she challenged it based on the constitutionality of the statute and using the 10th Amendment as her protection. The statute, this is a quote, "The statute interferes with the powers reserved to states," said Justice Kennedy in his decision. And Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's still on the court, this is a quote, "Bond, like any other defendant, has a personal right to be convicted under a constitutionally invalid law." So she was saying that the law that convicted her was constitutionally invalid. So they allowed her to challenge Pennsylvania in the criminal charge of using chemical weapons. So I thought that was kind of odd. But there it is. Do with it what you wish. So
it sounds like a case of prosecutorial overreach. Ooh. You know, when they're saying, you know, this is somebody who not just tried to poison the mistress, but she used chemicals which could be considered warfare chemicals, and so let's charge her, you know, with a federal violation on top of any state violations.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a good view of it. Yeah.
So did she get free?
That I don't know. She may have been retried under other laws, but this particular law about violating that federal statute.
Chemical weapons treaty.
Right, that was thrown out. So she could have been attempted murder. I'm sure there's a variety of other local laws, state laws, that they could have pursued. But this one, the Supreme Court said, can't use this one. So she might have got a lesser sentence.
I mean, she's using arsenic on the mistress.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't consider that chemical warfare.
I guess the Supreme Court would agree with you to a certain extent.
Right, but the Pennsylvania prosecutor wouldn't.
Yeah.
So doesn't the federal have to prosecute, not the state?
There's
different levels, and if it's a federal violation, then it has to be a federal prosecutor, not the state.
But the U.S. Court of Appeals is a federal court. So I think that they try to make the crime, heighten the damages. So they took it up. They made a federal case out of it.
Very good.
You're probably right. It shouldn't have been. And I think that's why she won.
Right.
Because the Supreme Court agreed that you didn't violate a federal law. There's other ways you can handle this.
So, Armin, aren't we seeing the same thing going on now where they're talking about taking the school shooters and prosecuting them as terrorists?
Yeah. I would think, yeah.
Well, it's not the same thing.
But a similar process.
Well, I mean, right. I mean, if you're considered a terrorist, you're not really a terrorist against the state, right? You're a terrorist against the United States government, right? And these school shooters are, generally speaking, students or ex-students or, you know, former students, whatever. And they're saying, oh, well, we want to prosecute them under terrorist laws.
Well, see, the reason why they want to prosecute them under terrorist laws is so they can create a category of domestic terrorism to be used against the rest of us later.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you got to create it. So you start with something that's offensive to everybody, like a school shooting.
Right.
Next thing you know, anybody in America born who does anything, like protest, whatever, whatever the future holds, then they start charging them under domestic terrorism, and it becomes natural. You're used to seeing it. Oh, well, look at that guy, McVeigh. He's a domestic terrorist. Look at those wackos in Waco. Even though they didn't kill anybody, the government killed them. But domestic terrorism. right? And it becomes natural to you. Next thing you know, you're not fighting it. You're not running over to, you know, in Tim McVeigh's defense and saying, whoa, wait a minute. He's trying to start a revolution. He's not trying to be a domestic terrorist. You know, he's trying to make a point. I mean, kill people. I don't back him up on that. But we become numb to it is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like, listening to our conversation, that there is that tension between the federal government, the state government, and local government that might confuse us onto who has the authority, and it overlaps. So going back to the killer in Florida, it appears that the local authorities should have done more. And now there's a cry for Congress to do something.
Florida just passed something, right?
They did. I don't know what it was, though. I only saw the headline. I didn't read the article, so right. I can't go there. I'm not sure. I'm not up on it.
Is that what they did, guys?
No, I don't know.
I'm not sure. I haven't seen the
reports. This news is so recent that none of us are up to
age limit and.
Oh, they want to defy them for the age limit.
Oh, they did already raise it. They passed.
Oh, to 21. Okay, so the age limit to buy a rifle in Florida, we're presuming, we don't know.
The wait time
21.
Okay, again, so
What was the current thing that we were talking about that this is relevant to today?
Right, the bigger issue that we were just discussing is between the federal government and state government. In the news on Wednesday, Governor Jerry Brown from California just came out and said that the nation's attorney, Jeff Sessions, is trying to start a lawsuit against some state laws in California that are violating our current federal immigration law. So,
sanctuary cities.
I got a couple of words that Governor Brown used with reference to Attorney General Jeff Sessions. He referred to this as a political stunt, and in his view, the federal government is going to war against California. He believes that Sessions, who doesn't always get along with the president, Donald Trump, thinks that maybe, quote, Donald will be happy with him for doing this. So, again, this issue seems to be going towards the personalization side as opposed to the legality side. The legal side is that we have federal law. And throughout history, we've talked about with the Bill of Rights, sometimes there's been supremacy of federal law over state law, and that's where the Constitution has to be challenged, and things go to the Supreme Court. This appears to be that in a nutshell. We have the governor of a state saying that I am not going to obey federal immigration law. We have a federal government saying you must. We're going to take you to court. So this will probably become a Supreme Court case.
Right. So basically, Jeff Sessions is saying that immigration is not a state issue.
Correct.
It's not something that you want 50 states all making decisions on independently of each other.
Yes.
And making immigration policy.
Yes.
He's saying this is a federal issue, and it's something the federal government deals with. And states have to abide by what the federal government tells them to do when it comes to the issue of immigration.
Well said.
Does that fit under our amendments?
Yeah.
This is the 10th Amendment. This is where this issue comes up, the state supremacy versus the federal government. And so the Supreme Court, if it rules on this, will make a determination of whether immigration is something that the states have some say in or whether it's something that the federal government has ultimate say in.
Now, the California state attorney general, a gentleman by the name of Xavier Becerra, stated, quote, the 10th Amendment provides The 10th Amendment provides California with the right to decline to participate in civil immigration enforcement. And I want to make a note. He used the word civil intentionally, not criminal.
Right.
Okay? So there's the two sides of this argument. And it relates to what we've been discussing for the past several weeks about the Bill of Rights. Also in the Constitution, before we discussed the Bill of Rights, there were certain articles that are enumerated. That means written, listed. You can see it. You can read it. You could almost touch it if you want to do that. And one of them is that the federal government has control of the borders. So stay tuned, people. I mean, what we're talking about is relevant. We should be a little bit knowledgeable about it. And that's what we're hoping to do, is provide some knowledge and maybe some interest as well.
You know, I love how they twist the words, throwing in civil when it's not civil at all. You know, it's not legal. It's illegal. It's, you know... And it's criminal. It's illegal and criminal is who they're protecting. And they're here. They are in the states illegally. So civil has got nothing to do with immigration, like your family, my family, your family. All of us come from immigrants who civilly did come into America.
Yeah, you're right. So that's their way of trying to win over support by making it a little bit less damage, sounds less damaging to people when you use words like civil as opposed to criminal, right? That's why we're Civil War Radio, not Criminal War Radio. Can I add one more case that I...
Go ahead.
I wanted to add this one for fun. This has been dealing with the Ninth Amendment, and it's ongoing right now. There's a gentleman, his name is Fane, F-A-N-E, kind of like Zane except with an F instead of a Z, Lawsman, L-O-Z-M-A-N. He's an ex-Marine.
Wait a minute. There's no such thing as an ex-Marine.
I'm getting this out of the paper. They don't know that. Right? He would never say that.
It was actually the Commandant of the Marine Corps. He said there's no more ex-Marines. Yep. Once you're a Marine, you're always a Marine.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep. You're right. I got a good friend of mine that you know, Skip Anderson. He reminds me, whenever I say ex-Marine, says the same thing. No such thing. So I'm sure Mr. Lawsman, because he's got a lot of fight in him, would agree with that.
Oh, I bet.
So this gentleman, since he's been out of the Marine Corps, has done very well for himself financially. He's a millionaire, made a lot of money in stock trading. And he was fortunate enough to go down to Riviera Beach, Florida, just a little bit north of Miami. And he found a marina where he decided to make his home. Now, the problem is that his home was a floating house. I haven't seen pictures of it, but I guess it looked more like a house on water. It didn't have its own power source to move it like a motorboat might. So I guess you could drag it if you wanted to walk along the dock and pull it that way, but it couldn't go on its own. Well, through the power of eminent domain, the city of Riviera Beach confiscated his boat. They called it a boat so that the federal government would get involved. And I think the Coast Guard actually took the boat house. He called it a house. Took it away. Destroyed it. His place to live. Gone. And he was able to work his case up to the Supreme Court. And in 2013, the Supreme Court decided 7-2 in his favor that the city of Riviera Beach, Florida, had no right taking his house. They determined that it was not a boat. The maritime law that they use, which is a federal law, mentioned it was a vessel. And one of the justices, I forget who it was, said that just because it floats doesn't make it a boat or a vessel. And he said something like, a piece of wood floats on water doesn't make it a boat. So this, they determined, was the man's home, and that the city violated his Ninth Amendment. I think they wanted to use the Ninth Amendment along with some other privacy, Fourth, Fifth. They threw in a bunch of amendments. So they shot down the city. Now, that's unusual enough. I don't know if they paid him any damages. I don't know where the story went. I'm just sticking on the Supreme Court case. But this Mr. Lawsman was at a city council meeting, and he started pointing fingers at council, city council members that have violated the law and were arrested, and he was mentioning names. And the woman that was the head of the city council told him to be quiet. His time was up, and he continued to speak. He said, no, I'm not done yet. And then she told the police officer in the chambers to get him out. And he came over and said, come on, I want to talk to you outside. He said, I'm not done yet. Then she insisted, arrest him. And they arrested him, and they hauled him away. And now that little video is on YouTube. So if you go to USA Today, find the article, there's a link in the article where you could actually see the little YouTube video of him being hauled away, handcuffed and hauled away.
So once again, we're seeing the same city violating his constitutional rights to free speech, right?
And what was that term you used about prosecutorial
overreach?
Okay, here's the legal term that they used, because he's going back to the Supreme Court, and he's going to make history, because this is only the first time in Supreme Court history that an individual like this has appeared in front of them twice in life.
I have a question.
Yes.
Interject at this
come up,
point.
You got to come up to the mic.
Yeah, come up. Come up.
This is Bob.
So how much did it cost this guy? How much money is he going to spend? I guarantee you, by the time he's done with this, he's going to have a couple of $1 million in legal bills tied up in this. Could I afford that?
Mm-mm.
No. Could you afford it? No. This man is fortunate enough to have the wherewithal and the resources to do this, way beyond that of the normal citizen. Okay?
Yep.
And prosecutorial overreach, like what you just stated here, okay, if the government can come after enough of the citizens, it isn't going to matter if one man can make it up to the Supreme Court or not. If they can come after enough of the citizens, it's all about control. It's all it is.
Well, this one guy, Layman, what's
Lawsman.
Lawsman.
Fane Lawsman.
Fane Lawsman. He's fighting the fight for all of us.
Yep.
He should do a GoFundMe account.
You know,
he's
a
millionaire.
And he should sue that city
for
breach of his First Amendment rights. I wanted to ask one thing.
Are you reading my notes again?
No.
You always do that.
I wanted to ask you, though, was it a town hall meeting?
City.
A city hall.
City hall meeting.
So he should have had the right to finish whatever he wanted to say.
I agree.
They didn't want him pointing out each person that was already arrested. And if they were arrested, they should have been recused themselves from that position.
Okay, let me finish my notes,
because
you're right. This new issue is free speech. His First Amendment rights were violated. So you're absolutely right. That's how he's trying to work his way back up to the Supreme Court. And Bob, you're right too. Fortunately, he has the money to fight him. And the city councilwoman that had him arrested was quoted in the paper saying that he's just a rich guy with a lot of money and doesn't know what to do with it. So now this free speech issue is also going to be, I like this term, using arrest for retaliation. So he calls it retaliatory arrest. Instead of that prosecutorial
overreach,
it's retaliatory arrest. And now, there is precedence about retaliatory prosecution. And he says, no, that's not what we're arguing. He does have help. You know, you saw there's a foundation, Stanford University Law Center in California has a foundation which I think is helping him represent. First time he went by himself. Now he's got representation for this case. And these people, I think, will do it because they're nonprofit. So I don't think he has to dish out of his own pocket for a lot of this. But the city, it's costing the city. And it sounds to me he's like a gentleman on a mission. And I'm saying good for him, because I see that as being inspirational for us nobodies, that maybe the law will be on our side. As I was driving over this morning, somebody said that, back to California for a second, it appears like the governor, Jerry Brown, and the mayor of Oakland, who revealed some information to illegal aliens so they could scoot and hide, that the person said that it sounds like politicians think they're above the law. And it seems to me that's the real issue, is that we have law that's supposed to apply to all of us equally, but there are certain people that weasel their way to a position of authority, and before you know it, I can do whatever I want. You guys can't. So that's enough. Give you some things to think about.
That's a lot to think about.
Yes, it is.
And I got to throw in, we should end here because we have other people that want to be on the show. But, you know, I don't agree with these sanctuary cities. But I also get a bad feeling about supporting the federal government telling the state what to do. But here's a state or a city saying, you know, basically misusing, you know, that amendment to bolster their political, basically, standings. And then here's our federal government coming in oppressively to make them do it. Mm-hmm. When really, I would much rather see no interaction at all on this. But, and you know, and I also got to say this too. What if someday we need Sanctuary City? What if when we become the, you know, the apple in our government's eye that they want to, you know, oppress us conservative, Second Amendment, Republican, right-wing, white guys, whatever, and we need a sanctuary city. We're back in it now because of the illegals. But what happens when we need something like that?
I think you got three basic choices. You could either fight, flee, or get in line.
That's the same thing they tell you for terrorism. Run, hide, fight. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pretty
run,
much.
Run, fight, and get in line.
There's a lot of gray area between those three basic choices. But, I mean, it really boils down to, we've talked about this often with friends. Now, what are you going to do if all of a sudden a bus pulls up in front of your house and there's bars on the windows and they tell you, you got to evacuate? Why? Don't have to. Just get in the bus. Everybody's got to evacuate. What do you do? You either fight, you flee, or you get in line.
Right. And that's what they did. That's what they did to the Jewish people in World War II. Get in these cattle cars. You're going to go. We're removing you out of the ghetto.
Get in the shower. We're going to clean you up. Give you some fresh clothes.
We don't have to tell you why.
Yeah, and then you never come out of the shower.
Showers? Cattle cars?
There's this area in Colorado outside of Denver that the government seized this farmland. And the area was tested with the nuclear weapons and everything. And it's all cleaned up and everything right now, and they made it into like a little park. But it did happen.
So your point is that they pulled in, told everybody to get out?
Yeah, they seized the property.
All right. Well, it's Civil War Radio with Armin Marinetti, Melissa Walker, Mike Yarger, and some input from Bob from Scope. And Bob, throw me your last name.
Brannan. B-R-A-N-N-A-N.
That's Irish, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and we'll be right back after these messages with Scope, Shooter's Committee on Political Education for New York, and it'll be Don Hill and Bob Brannan.
Don Smith, but that's close enough.
And we are.
introducing now, in the corner of Case's Mini Storage Plaza, wearing camouflage, boxers, and smoking a cigar, hailing from Canandaigua, New York, Corporal Tim Thornton's the all-new The Military Exchange. The Military Exchange is proud to present over 5,000 feet of pure 100% military. The Military Exchange is your source for all your military needs and proudly supports active reserve and former military, VFWs, legions, and leagues, Boy Scouts, Sea Cadets, Civil Air Patrol, and your family. Presenting cigars fresh from our plantation in the Dominica, collectibles, t-shirts, hoodies, and ball caps, rank and insignia uniforms for parade, security, and law enforcement, camouflage clothing, outerwear, wool pants, parkas, and field jackets, camping backpack, tents, and sleep systems, vintage clothing and gear, Class A's past and present, tactical and survival gear, antiques and airsoft, brand new and pre-enjoyed military camouflage and boots. Check out our military talk show at IronMikesMX.com. 5,000 feet to pure 100% military in Canandaigua, New York.
Welcome back to WOKR 1310, Three Men and a Microphone, and this is SCOPE, Shooters Committee on Political Education, and I have to correct myself. I am here today with Mr. Don Smith and Bob Brannon. Hello, sir. How are you guys today?
We're good, Tim. Thank you very much for having us on. You've got a picture here which advertises the exchange, the military exchange.
Yes, sir.
And it happens to have a wooden gun and a plastic gun sitting on there.
Huh.
One is in by the way, I was going to show you this article that I thought you might be interested in. It shows what looks to be an M1 carbine or carbine and AR-15.
Or
some M16. Modification.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it's kind of interesting because today we talk about, you know, these black guns, and they're generally made of plastic or metal or a combination thereof. And unfortunately, the focus is on guns today. And, on you know, with our recent shooting down in Florida, for example, we begin to look at the reasons, and it always seems to focus on the guns, which is one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum, however, is perhaps some of the causes, and Bob has alluded to this, the fact that the young fella that did the shooting in Florida had been visited, or his home had been visited, what, 36 times? Is that right, Bob?
I believe that's right.
Yeah.
They say 25, but it's
I've heard
36, 39.
Yeah.
More than this, a few.
This, more than a few.
This yep. young man held a gun to his mother's head. This young man,
like the fed up,
literally beat his mother, stepmother up so bad she had to required medical attention, and yet nobody did anything.
All the signs were there on this killer from Parkland. The torturing of small animals, stalking other people, abuse on his own mother. It was all there. It's just not for some reason, this police department in Parkland was told to not prosecute, not arrest as many people, and especially in the, I believe, in the teenage crime area, so that their statistics would go down. So they stood down all the time, just like they did that day, instead of going in and helping those poor kids. This belongs right on the seat of whatever political party was above the sheriff that pushed this issue. And there is a picture of the sheriff with Hillary. And that sheriff squarely holds all this responsibility. And his department has been under investigation several times for in-house drugs, prostitution, other things. So this is a very corrupt police department. That was their responsibility to protect our kids.
Yeah, very true.
I would agree.
Yeah, and again, the focus always comes back on the guns. What's interesting, I thought, the author of this article, by the way, that compares the wooden gun to the plastic gun, talks about the fact that after World War II, all of these carbines were brought back into this country. They made millions of them during World War II. And effectively, if you look at the two guns and compare them, they're both semi-automatics. They're both what? 30-round magazines, all right? And one of them, the 223, is used in the AR-15, whereas at the M1 is a 30-round, which most people would consider to be a much heavier round, more damaging round, etc. I don't know if that's true. I mean, a 223 is nothing more than a bit larger than a 22. So effectively,
right.
You know, it may have a greater range. I don't know about damage-wise. But it's just interesting that, you know, these soldiers came back, these guns came back after World War II. They were widely available, and yet we didn't see these mass shootings, these public shootings occurring. Why? And this author, I thought, made some good points. What is it about this AR-15? Does it have more firepower? Not really. Is there more ammo available? Well,
doesn't have to be.
Doesn't have to be. Ammo back then was a lot cheaper than it would be today anyway. You know, people could afford it, I hope. What's changed? And he began to list a number of things. I thought it was rather pointed. Families today are under attack. We know that about 62%, about two-thirds of families today are intact with two parents. Okay, God was removed from school. Prayers were forbidden. School administrators no longer able to punish kids. Can't be defeated any longer. Everyone gets a trophy. Teasing, what used to be teasing, is now bullying. Girls should not be treated as girls, and boys should not be treated as boys. We've got the Girl Scouts now joining, or girls joining the Boy Scouts. When in doubt, if you're a physician, administer drugs. And we've seen examples of that. I had an article in here that went down through a whole list of individuals who were involved in some type of shooting. It wasn't necessarily a mass shooting, which requires, I believe, according to the FBI, 4 fatalities or more, and the drugs that they were on and how it affected them. The kids out at Colorado in that Columbine shooting were on drugs. Yeah. This young man in Florida was on some type of a psychotropic drug. Okay. Now, I don't know what opiates or what they are. A lot of them were just common drugs that a physician might administer to you or I if we went in and said, for example, we're having problems with anxiety. Might give us some Xanax or depression. Now, Zoloft, for example. These kids were taking some of these medications. Here are games that we see today, video games in particular, where you kill people or cops. Movies that glorify violence. We know violence is glorified today. And then, of course, you get your 15 minutes of fame or longer on social media and plus on our regular media. You know? How many times do you have to watch something related to one of these shootings before you realize it had happened? I mean, there are all kinds of publicity out there, and these individuals seek publicity. The old copycat effect. We know that, for example, some of these shooters have spent a year or more planning these events, you know, well in advance. And, you know, you look at these guns and you look at the Columbine shooting. Those were shotguns that were used. They weren't even AR-15s. You know? But they're going after these guns. Gun control, gun control, gun control. That seems to be it. And it's what Bob said earlier, and that is, it's all about control. That's the key. You know, the government control. And that's what we have to be so leery of. So in a nutshell, the only thing that would be added here is that we have seen the use increased use of these psychotropic drugs and emotional isolation. We have seen two key elements that weren't rampant after World War II, but they are now. Yeah, the guns have changed. We went from wood to plastic. Has society changed? What do you think? Yeah, I think it's a big, yeah. But yet, if you look today at information as to the cause of deaths, and we link guns to about 30,000 deaths per year in this country. And out of those 30,000, if you break that down, about 65% are by suicide. So there's this great push against guns because of the suicide rate. However, consider Australia. They basically banned guns. They confiscated guns. And guess what? The suicide rate went up. They use other methods.
People try to use... Sorry.
Yeah, no.
They try to use Australia as an example of a society that took away guns. And one of my more left-leaning friend's daughters posted something on Facebook. So I looked it up. And you want to be shocked at the amount of mass murders and killings since they gave up their guns. Australia is a very poor example. Matter of fact, it's very shocking.
Yeah.
How it's in my opinion, it's actually gotten worse. So, taking away the guns for Australia did not prove anything.
If you look worldwide at death rates via guns, okay, you'll find we're down at the bottom, near the bottom. A country like Finland is up near the top. Yeah. And there's data out there. Guy Smith, who has gunfacts.com, you can go on there and find a lot of this data. But what's interesting is when you start looking at these homicides by guns, guess where they're occurring? Most of them in four cities. Okay? Four cities. Now, by the way, Bob, jump in here anytime if you wish. Let's take the 65% of homicide by gun out of our 30,000 estimated deaths per year in this country. Okay, let's take out 15% by law enforcement in the line of duty. Let's take out another 17% through some type of criminal activity. One bad guy shooting another bad guy, gang violence, and so forth, most of which occurs in the cities, we know. And let's take out about 3% for accidental discharge. Okay, what are we left with out of that 30,000? You know?
About 5,100 by these stats. And Don mentioned earlier, most of the gun deaths are in four cities, and these cities in order are Chicago, Baltimore, Detroit, and Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And Washington, D.C. has seen a 54% increase over prior years. These cities have some of the toughest gun laws in the nation. Mm-hmm. And if you were to talk to city representatives, what they will tell you is, well, we have to get rid of the guns because the people in the city get their guns from outside sources. And, okay, you're getting guns from outside sources. Where? Oh, well, criminal element. Hello? Criminal element.
Yeah.
Criminals are not going to follow the law. Period. That's why we call them criminals.
I never hear about a big raid on drug houses and capturing a cache of weapons. If I heard that more from law enforcement, we went after this house because we knew they had a cache of weapons. We went after this place. There's rumor, and I've heard it twice now in my life, that there's a home in Rochester And it's the same home. You go there, you rent a gun, do the crime, return it. You rent the gun. And then, so you, I don't know how the economics of that works other than it, you're renting it and it, they give it back to you. So it's like a truck rental. And it's house. I've heard it from two different people in the span of 10 years, I think. But has that house ever been raided? Do the law enforcement know about that house? Probably. Well, when do they do something about it? I want to hear those stories. But you don't hear those stories. Because it's much easier to get the gun from you or me than it is from a criminal who will shoot back.
Or attempt to get the gun from us, which is a point. I'm getting ahead of the story here a little
bit.
That's all right.
I've been wanting to throw that rental business in the news for a decade.
Well, the fact that the guns are being loaned to one another in these cities, you know, could be the same gun that's responsible for how many homicides. We have no idea.
Exactly.
Yeah. But what Bob is saying is that 25% of these homicides by guns are within these four cities. Amazing. Nationwide. 25%. Just amazing.
I sat on a federal jury in 2009 for a case up here in Rochester. I'm not going to mention the guy's name or the case or anything like that, but basically what this guy did is he went around, and I just said earlier the criminal element, this man sold muscle and firepower to local gangs. Okay? He would go around, break into houses, and steal shotguns, rifles, anything he could get his hands on, and then he would go back and supply, okay, weapons, these weapons to local gangs or whoever wanted them. This man had, I think, 13 felony arrests in his life. And it's my understanding that he was up now, he was going to be put away for like 35 years. And the judge came in after the verdict was rendered and he thanked us because now he can finally do what should have been done years previous. It's we talk about the criminal justice system, so to speak, and justice, as this gentleman right here said, justice is defined as making things right. Okay? By rote, from everything I'm seeing here, if you're a law-abiding citizen in the United States of America, and if you own guns, you really don't have any justice. The justice is what the powers that be choose to give you. And that is not the way this country's supposed to work.
Well, you know, Armin mentioned California. California has the strictest gun laws in the nation. And yet, it hasn't really reduced crime.
You've been listening to SCOPE, Shooters Committee on Political Education with Don and Bob. Keep your gun holstered and your rifle in the rack, and we'll be right back with the second half of SCOPE, and then on to Three Men and a Mic with Michael Yarger from Canandaigua 2020. Thank you for listening to the Combat Radio Network. On Channel 1310 WOKR, this has been the Civil War Radio, and coming up next, Three Men and a Microphone. You can check us out every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., and every Sunday afternoon, an encore performance, 2 in the afternoon to 4 p.m. Thank you again for listening to Combat Radio Network, brought to you by the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, where they are 5,000 feet of pure 100% military.